This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. One of the silver linings of this long pandemic, if there is one, is that many people discovered or rediscovered their love of cooking. Last year, at the height of the quarantine, these listeners called us to share their proud creations.
Since the onset of the pandemic, I've brewed 3 big batches of kombucha using a variety of teas, chai, Assam, and white. I've grown oyster mushrooms from a mail-ordered bag of mycelial spawn and fermented 2 jars of sauerkraut.
I've done a lot of bread baking and a lot of fermenting. I recently made a sauerkraut with red cabbage, beets, and carrots, and it was really, really good. And I have a whole bunch of ginger that I accidentally bought too much of. So now I'm going to make a fermented ginger paste and see how that works.
So I made dandelion jam, pesto from the chickweed and dead nettle in my yard. I've been brewing kombucha. I'm trying to make kvass. I've been using a mesophilic yogurt starter to make my own yogurt. It's really been great fun and a good way to pass time.
Those were the voices of Morgan from Portland, Camille and Tanya from Arkansas. Thank you for your submissions to the Science Friday Vox Pop app. Maybe you've already done the sourdough or the pickles or the yogurt, right? My next guests have the perfect next step for you. It's called koji. It's a white fuzzy mold, and it smells like fruit. And we can thank it for a splendid array of foods from East Asian cultures, including soy sauce, miso, and sake. And my next guests want you to join in to make culinary delights with the help of this magical mold, even beyond the traditional uses. Think koji charcuterie or miso peanut butter. Here to talk more about the transformation power of aspergillus or Isay are my guests, the co-authors of the book Koji Alchemy. Rich Shi is a mechanical engineer by day and the exhibit engineer for NYC's Museum of Food and Drink. And Jeremy Umansky is a co-chef and co-owner of Larder Delicatessen and Bakery in Cleveland, Ohio. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you.
I know I've already given the overview that koji is a mold and that it's been used for thousands of years, but please, you got to sell me on the idea of using a mold to make food. Jeremy, why is this so delicious?
Well, one thing to keep in mind is you're already eating this mold in one way, shape, or form. I'm willing to bet that virtually every listener today has some soy sauce in their house, whether it's a bottle of it or a little packet from Chinese takeout. And that soy sauce cannot be made without this mold. So we already have it in our lives. We already eat so many different fermented foods that rely on molds, things like cheeses and charcuterie. We can lump yeast into that. You know, they're both types of fungi. So bread, it's already exists there. So using it to make foods more delicious is pretty simple and straightforward.
Mm-hmm. And is it the rice that we're really cooking with it, right?
Exactly. You can't just take the spores of the mold and make something delicious. You have to get it to grow first. So you grow it on rice or barley or actually any starchy substrate. So it could be wheat berries. It could be rye. It could be hominy.
Give me an idea what it looks like. You know, I've seen photos. It looks very pretty growing there on the rice.
I think pretty is a lackluster word, Ira. It is sultry and stunning. I mean, it's sultry and stunning. It really is. You look at it and you get lost in it. It is just so white and fuzzy and fluffy. It's inviting, almost like, you look at a picture of a sky with beautiful, like, cumulus clouds in it, and you're like, that just makes you relax and feel at home. And it just, I could hug one of those clouds, or I could lay down on it and take a nap. Koji kind of has that same effect on you when you look at it and it's growing fresh. And then you throw its aroma on top of that, which, you know, its aroma is, you know, green apple and champagne and honeysuckle, tropical fruit like mango and pineapple with a little bit of mushroominess there. Some people even say they pick up roasted chestnut. I mean, it's just absolutely bewitching and intoxicating from how it looks to how it smells to how it tastes. It's just absolutely incredible.
You know, you sound like you're describing a fine wine. Rich, does it do that for you too? Make you feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, I am not as externally excited about Koji as Jeremy is, but internally it just blows my mind. Koji is so simple. All you need is like a warm space with a little bit of humidity that can be achieved in an array of ways, very similar to setting up setting up for bread proofing. And you just basically boil some water, or you set up a steamer and you mix these ingredients in, dust on some spores, and you mix every 12 hours. And who can't do that over the course of 2 days? I mean, you can go to work, come back home and do your mix. And at the end of the day, it's done and ready to go. And then all you have to do is add some water to it and some grain, like cooked grains. And you can make this amazing sweet porridge that you can also use as a marinade. That's a perfect, like the perfect marinade for any piece of meat or protein you put it on. Because we often go through the exercises of making a marinade such that you enhance the flavor of the core component itself. Koji does that by default by taking the enzymes to break down the constituent parts of this food and creates, you know, basically what I like to refer to as, you know, an automatic barbecue sauce that has nothing, that is made with everything that's part of the food that you create it with.
And Jeremy, does it have a taste of its own? If I put it on rice, for example, and I'm growing it on rice, I know what rice tastes like. Will then the other flavor there be that of the mold?
Yeah, so it's actually going to transform the rice itself. So oftentimes we talk about one of the molds, Aspergillus luchensis, that produces citric acid as it grows. Not as a byproduct, but actually produces it as it grows. And if you were to eat some rice that had this mold growing on it, it would taste like Sour Patch Kids. And we're talking just plain old rice here.
And Rich, are there different strains of koji that produce different flavors?
There are specific kojis that create different flavors based on their enzyme engines. Sojay has this an enzymatic engine that is more on the protease side to break down proteins into amino acids. As these enzymes become active in terms of breaking down the base food substances, you get all sorts of, you know, interesting and funky flavors. I recall, you know, every time that I grow it on rye or even teff, I get these, you know, mushroomy aromas and as well as flavors.
We're all familiar with soy sauce, for example, which is one of the many things koji is used to make, as you said before. How does that process work? I mean, how do you start from a mold and get to a tasty soy sauce, Rich?
Yeah, so to make soy sauce, you basically cook some soybeans, whether you soak them and steam them or you boil them such that in the state where they're cooked all the way through. So that's one part of it. The other part is you have toasted cracked wheat. So what you do is you basically have a one-to-one ratio of these two ingredients. You mix the ingredients together. You allow it to cool to a temperature that's, you know, pretty much to your body temp. And that's how a lot of Japanese makers gauge when you can actually inoculate it with the spores. Then you basically sprinkle it lightly with spores. Once you grow the koji, you put it in basically a salt water brine, and you allow it to ferment. And then you have a specific mixing schedule based on the temperature conditions and the stages of making it.
So that's how it happens.
Yeah, and you know, the only difference between miso or an amino paste, as we call them, because they're pastes and they're rich in amino acids, and an amino sauce like soy sauce is water content. So whether you decide you want to make a miso or gochujang or any of these pastes, or you want to make an amino sauce, it's just varying degrees of water that they contain. So you can go in either direction just as easily.
And sake, can you get alcohol?
Oh my God, can you? You know, it's really interesting because of the breath, the types of sugars, like the oglio sugars and the glucose that's formed in an amazake, which is a mixture of a cooked starch, the koji inoculated starch and water, you can get a lot of alcohol. I mean, you can get upwards towards a 12% ABV without doing anything extraordinary,
literally just putting some yeast in and letting it sit and be happy. So you can get some fantastic alcohols. And some of the kojis that produce these different flavors and aromas and some that produce citric acid can just add infinite layers of complexity to any of the alcohols you make.
Hmm. I understand you can make popcorn. Rich, how did you come up with that?
So I was kind of just looking around in my pantry to figure out, hey, what could I really play around with to create this accessible starch that could, you know, have these gaps such that the koji, the mold would grow in between because you need a level of air in between the grains. And I just saw this popcorn and I said, well, when you pop popcorn, you're basically, you know, you create, it's a basically a pressure cooker for each kernel. And when it blows up, it uses the internal steam to blow it up to create a puffed condition such that the starch is very accessible. As we all know, when we eat it, it dissolves in our mouths. So I just decided that, hey, I don't have to cook it. I can make it explode and create this accessible starch. And all I needed to do was not to make it too wet, is just to mist it with a little bit of water. And there I had my accessible starch. I had plenty of air for the mold to grow. And I just, you know, to assure that it would grow well, I just dusted it with a little bit of flour and the spores. And it took off like gangbusters. And for somebody who doesn't necessarily want to sit and wait for, you know, your grains to soak or your beans to soak, and you just want to try something, it's a pretty cool starting point.
Can you use koji as, you know, as a quarantine experiment for all of us now?
You most definitely can. Whatever level you want to plug in with, you can. So for example, traditionally throughout Japan, they use a product called shio koji, which is this porridge of the molded rice or barley with salt added to it. And that is used as a general all-purpose seasoning. So you can easily find that online and you can order a little package of it. It'll show up at your doorstep. You can rub it on some chicken or some steak or saute some vegetables with it and see instantly the short-term drasticness that koji brings to amazing flavor as you're working with it. So while it is straightforward, should you not want to grow the mold, there's several great companies out there. Most of them are really small family-owned businesses like Cold Mountain Koji, and you can buy pre-inoculated rice or barley from them. So if you wanted to go ahead and make an amino paste like a miso or gochujang, you could simply buy the inoculated grains, mix them with a little water to hydrate them, open up a can of beans, mix those together with the inoculated grain and a little bit of salt. We use 3% of its weight as a very minimum on the base, but you can go 5%, 7%, 10%, and let it sit. And you will have your own amino paste, something like a miso. Or you could simply order spores and just go all in and start growing the mold on everything like we do. There really are no barriers to entry for working with koji.
I'm Ira Plato, and this is Science Friday from WNYC Studios. Does playing with molds give you a new dimension about creativity with food? You know, we're talking about jams and pickles and pestos and vinegars. Now you have something new to play with?
I think it's just the fact that koji allows you to do so many multifaceted things. A lot of us focus on very specific fermented products like kraut or kimchi or, you know, yogurt or a very specific beer from a very specific region with all these, you know, incredible malts and hops and specific water and a specific alcohol content. What we have to think about is they got to that point because somebody just left something out for a period of time such that it can be consumed at a specific time for survival. And people got tied into this idea of, hey, I really love that. I want to keep making it the same exact way because not only is it safe to consume, but it's delicious. But our idea is to think about this in a much larger scheme in terms of that specific discovery can be with any food that you apply it to. I mean, granted, things can go wrong, but it's the adventure of all these possibilities that we have access to, whether it be the ingredients, technology, ideas, you know, or even, you know, past products that we know and love that we can kind of change up and play around with. And that's the nature of what we love to do.
How does it go with pastrami?
Oh, man. If I describe it, I'll be bragging. So I'll let Rich, who's eaten my pastrami, describe it.
So I think one of the things to understand about it is that, you know, through these, you know, through usage of, you know, creating these amino acids through the, you know, through the enzymes and these sugars, you get this amazing flavor like that bounds, you know, that's above and beyond what you could do in a traditional method. With a traditional method, you know, you have the slow process of heating such that you can create the food that is quite unctuous by breaking down the connective tissue, and it makes it moist and it makes it very pleasing. And then you also have a brine to create this, you know, this salinity. But with the koji, you can actually create like this level of tenderness and depth of flavor without doing any sort of manipulation. And it's just bringing it up a level of what it already is.
I'm coming over.
We'll save a seat on the patio for you.
Thank you both. This was quite fascinating. I hope we have inspired a lot of people to try some new cooking ideas. Rich Shi is a mechanical engineer by day and the exhibit engineer for NYC's Museum of Food and Drink. And Jeremy Umansky is a chef and owner of Larder Delicatessen and Bakery in Cleveland, Ohio, and they're co-authors of the book Koji Alchemy, Rediscovering the Magic of Mold-Based Fermentation. Thank you guys for enlightening us and giving us something more to do as we stay home.
You're welcome, Ira. Thank you so much. This has been a dream come true.
Yeah, this was a pleasure. Yeah, thank you so much.
That conversation was from 2020.